continuing the reading of the account of Krishna dealing with Kuvalayapida, the maddened elephant. This is verse 3 in the section. And I'm praying to God at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada that there is a purport. And there's two sentences. Badva parikaram shauri. Badva parikaram shauri. Badva parikaram shauri. Samuhya kutilalakan. Samuhya kutilalakan. Samuhya kutilalakan. Samuhya kutilalakan. Badva parikaram shori. Samuhya kutilalakan. Uvacha hastipam. Vacha. Uvacha hastipam vacha. Uvacha hastipam vacha. Megha nada gabiraya. Megha nada gabiraya. Megha nada gabiraya. Badva parikaram shori. Samuhya kutilalakan. Uvacha hastipam vacha. Megha nada gabiraya. Badva parikaram shori. Samuhya kutilalakan. Uvacha hastipam vacha. Megha nada gabiraya. Badva parikaram shori. Samuhya kutilalakan. Uvacha hastipam vacha. Megha nada gabiraya. Badva. Binding. It's binding. Parikaram. His clothes. Shauri. Lord Krishna. Samuhya. Tying together. Kutila. Curled. Alakan. The locks of his hair. Uvacha. He spoke. Hastipam. To the elephant keeper. Vacha. With words. Megha. Of a cloud. Nada. Like the sound. Gabiraya. Grave. Translation. Securely binding up his clothes and tying back his curly locks, Lord Krishna addressed the elephant keeper with words as grave as the rumbling of a cloud. Please repeat. Securely binding up his clothes and tying back his curly locks, Lord Krishna addressed the elephant keeper with words as grave as the rumbling of a cloud. Purport. Lord Krishna was obviously preparing for a fight. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the Lord put aside his jacket, tightened his belt, and tied his hair. Om Agyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurim Militang Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Srila Prabhupada Kija. We laugh when we hear that verse, don't we? Because it's the sign of, I don't know how it's here in Mauritius, but when two men want to fight, when they've had a little too much to drink, they take their jackets off. Huh? They take their jackets off. Huh? Why do they do that? I don't know. They take their jackets off. And as they're taking their jacket off, they say, we, okay. It's just very short. And it's over, just like that. This life, give to Krishna. And you won't be disappointed. You'll always be happy. Krishna will always reciprocate more than you give him. And just when you think that Krishna's not reciprocated, let's say a boy will have a girlfriend. And sometimes she doesn't like him anymore, but she knows that if she says, I don't love you anymore, he will get very angry. You see, either he'll get very angry or he'll get emotionally disturbed. So she says, I don't like you anymore. She sends him a text. Okay. We say in our country, she dumps him. Or in the old days, she used to send him before the days of the mobile phone, and before people had phones in their homes, and when I was young, the only way you could make a phone call to someone was going to a phone box. You had to go to a public phone box, which in England is bright red. It's a little glass box with lots of windows, wood with, it looks like a little house. You go in there, you make a phone call. So somehow or another, the girls used to tell their boyfriends that they did not want them anymore on a Friday night. Usually they had arranged to meet on a Friday night, but it was on a Friday night he would get the phone call and say, I'm not coming. So on Saturday morning, many phone boxes used to be broken because the boy used to put the phone down and he would be so angry, you see, so maddened with frustrated desire that he would kick the windows in on the telephone box. And then, of course, we had bus shelters where he would catch the bus, also made of glass. Well, now things in England are not made of glass. We have too many angry boys, you see. So this is a problem. This anger has to be discharged. So people kick things. They'll kick a cat or a dog, or they will go and they will beat up someone. So in England, unfortunately, in the south side of London, the number of innocent people who've just been stabbed by someone. See, bus shelters and telephone boxes, that was one thing. Now the men are carrying knives. When they get angry, they will attack someone. And every week now, we have someone who's been killed by a man with a knife. And when we find out the reason, it's just these reasons. You know? Prabhupada said the whole Western society is being polluted by lust. He said, first you eat meat, and the meat is too much protein. It makes you very lusty. Then you cannot satisfy your lust, you see? Then you become angry. Then the anger is discharged to others. One time Prabhupada said that nuts contain more protein than lust. He said, making people very lusty. Then you try to drown your sorrows. In other words, if you're angry, means you usually say something that afterwards you have to apologize for. You see, and then we have, you know, problems in relationships and families, and fathers beat their children, and sometimes the wives beat their husband, and lust is like a vicious circle. So what happens then is that in order to compensate for this and feeling bad about myself, because then I drink alcohol to forget it. See, I drink alcohol to forget. So then the man even makes, under the influence of alcohol, he makes even more mistakes. So it is a cycle. Uncontrolled lust, discharged anger, drinking to forget the mistakes that I've made, or what I've done when I'm angry, and then illusion, madness, and then, just like Bhagavad Gita 2:60 to 64, we find the intelligence becomes polluted and we spiral out of control. Therefore, most religious systems teach us to control lust. They teach us to control lust. So whatever religion you follow, whether it's Islam or Christianity or Buddhism or Hinduism, you'll find that there is times of fasting. You'll find that there's times when you have to cover your body. There's times of day when you prepare yourself. There's things that you do, things that you don't do. It's all meant to be this maryad, this division between one place and another place, so that there's less chance of lust arising. So, in the beginning, Krishna says, slay this insatiable enemy known as lust. So, if lust is not, if lust, greed, and anger are not killed by pure devotional service, then they stay on. And then there's every possibility that they infect the system, not just your own bodily system, but the social system. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was preaching very heavily against types of Vaishnavism that had become heavily infected by lust, greed, anger, and the rest. He counted 13 sampradayas, which means 13 groups of Vaishnavas or pseudo-Vaishnavas that were practicing in Bengal at the time, some of which included many thousands of people. Now these 13 sampradayas, they don't go away. It's not only in Bengal, but they're born from lust, greed, and anger mixed with Vaishnav life. And they, wherever there are Vaishnavas, even here in Mauritius, this lust, greed, and anger combined with Vaishnavism can pollute the social system. Anywhere where there's ISKCON, where there's Gaudiya Vaishnavas, these systems can pollute. So it's very good to study those and understand what's happening. So there's only four main ones, and then the others are derivatives of the main ones. But they show us different things about how not to do devotional service and how things have to be controlled. What is the time? What time do you finish? By 9, okay. So are we okay so far?
Yes.
Story? No more stories? Okay. So that was Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was 150, 170 years ago. 100 years ago, there was a study done by a Bengali university professor, and he counted 56 different organizations. 56 different organizations. And sometimes we look at ISKCON and we think ISKCON is really growing and it's really big. Like when I gave my talk last night and previous night, I'm complimenting ISKCON Mauritius for being so, the highest density of Gaudiya Vaishnavas per head of population of anywhere in ISKCON. And this is true. So we can be very proud of that. Unfortunately, the followers of Advaita Acharya in that sampradaya, they number hundreds of thousands. But it's just they never leave Bengal. So you won't see them, you won't interact with them. You'll be unable to interact with them. Even their literature, you won't be able to see it or read it. Nobody leaves. They can't even afford to leave Bengal and Bangladesh. But there's hundreds of thousands of them. So when we talk about the Hare Krishna movement, we really talk about the Hare Krishna movement that we know. But there are other Hare Krishna movements that are bigger than ISKCON. ISKCON's very big, actually. Very big, very substantial. And will continue growing due to a number of historical factors. The fact that it's exported, the fact that it has international organization, the fact that English is a medium. Although now we should probably say that the most popular language in ISKCON is Russian. Yeah. So some of the Russians have been asking, why is the GBC completely Americans? Huh? Why is the GBC mostly American when ISKCON is mostly Russian? Very good question. And the devotees from India are asking the same thing. Indian RGB are asking the same question. Why is it all Americans on the GBC when, you know, most of ISKCON in India is Indians? These are very good questions, but these are historical legacies that we're left with. But ISKCON changes, and we want to make sure that it changes and it grows for the better. But one big threat to ISKCON is the 13 upper sampradayas. And they've already started happening. And the difficulty is that this time you won't see them. I went on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada in 1975 through the village of Lechmore Heath. And I was so intent on, I used to do this thing that I always used to want to be the person who was immediately following Prabhupada right behind him. So I was walking right behind him. Anyway, he stopped. And I almost banged into my spiritual master anyway, so I dropped back a little bit. They told me to stand a little bit back because he sometimes stops and speaks. Anyway, he didn't speak very much on that occasion, but I was able to walk with him. But one unusual event happened in that one of his disciples had gone to Bengal to learn more about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and had become involved with a group known as the Sakhi Bekis, where in order to cultivate the mood of a gopi, the men actually dress and speak as gopis. So the men have long hair down here. They have bangles. They shave twice a day. And they wear saris. But it just so happened that this devotee, while he was in Bengal, he was walking around barefoot. And what he'd done he'd bought some very strong boots, and they were British army boots. So he was standing at a side street waiting for Srila Prabhupada, and his name was Premananda. Just so you know, he was a real person. Anyway, he was a disciple, but he was standing there, long hair, bangles, red and white sari, British army boots. And I looked at him, and I looked at Srila Prabhupada, and I looked at him, and I looked at Brian, and I thought, there's going to be trouble. But Prabhupada just looked, and he just walked on. He walked on. And we never saw Premananda again. The difficult thing for Premananda is that not everybody who wears Gaudiya Vaishnav tilak and who says Haribol, Haribol, Haribol is or three loud Haribols is a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's even a Haribol movement. Did you know that? There's a Haribol movement. They're also an Upa Sampradaya. They have big drums and they're very hairy and they live in the jungles of East Bengal, and they beat these big drums, but that's all they do. And they smoke hashish, and they have these big drums, big sticks, and they go Haribo, 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 Haribo. Just, you know, Haribo, 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 Haribo. It's funny. It's funny, but it gets worse. So, anything you can think of, and anything that you can't think of, somebody has tried already. So this Sakhi Beki, Beki means Besha, the dress. But in the main, the people that both Bhaktivinoda Thakur, well actually, firstly Narottam Das Thakur, and then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, and then our own Srila Prabhupada, the people that they were mainly fighting was the Jata Gosai, the Goswamis, and the Smarta Brahmanas. Now the thing here is that the Jata Gosai, Gosai being short for Goswamis, they claim that they are specially empowered because they come from the descendants of one of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So for instance, we have the most powerful line is the Nityananda Vamsa. Nityananda Vamsa claim to come, they claim to be seminal descendants of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda only had one son, Virachandra Goswami, and he had disciples, not sons. So, but they all claim to be family descendants. I was at Janmashtami many times at Bhaktivedanta Manor, four times. We've had people visit, and they are descendants, family descendants of either Advaita Acharya or Nityananda Prabhu or someone else. And these are names mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, you can go to Bengal and you can find the disciples of the disciples of disciples of disciples of disciples of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You can also find people who are the sons of the sons of the sons of the sons, and they can trace their line back. But the Jati Gosai, Jata means family, family Goswamis, they have taken the name Goswami to them, and they are hereditary gurus, which previously was the system. There is a system, and to a certain extent, that system has some advantages. It has some advantages. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami, our Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he arranged for the puja at Sri Radharaman temple to be done by the sons of 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 the disciples. And so that system guarantees that living within a certain place, you have pujaris. And this might be advantageous for ISKCON, because ISKCON always lacks pujaris. For some reason, we're always going to Mayapur to find a nice Bengali pujari and bringing them over. Everywhere in the ISKCON world, we have a nice Bengali pujari, or two, or three, or four, or five. Especially in America, they love to come to America, get their green card, and settle down. But this tendency ultimately is not going to be helpful for us. You see, this international tendency that we have won't be very helpful when the oil runs out. And when we can't fly in, you know, sannyasis, we can't fly in the guru, we can't fly in pujaris, but we have to depend on local people. So local people means that who's going to look after Radha Golokananda in the future? We have seen that, unfortunately, sometimes disciples are very fickle. Because my Guru Maharaj used to come to Mauritius and I was the pujari for Radha Golokananda. Now my Guru Maharaj doesn't come to Mauritius, he lives somewhere else, and I've also gone to live somewhere else. You see? And then you lose the devotees. So this is not the principle of an ISKCON temple. The ISKCON temple is that the pujaris should be fighting each other to do seva. Today's my day to do seva. Today's my day to do the offering, not yours. No, you got it wrong. I'm every second Tuesday. Last Tuesday you did it. You see, instead of who's going to cook the offerings today? I don't know. We can't find anybody. And the poor temple president, he's, I don't know who's going to cook the offerings today. And he has to make this arrangement. Anyway, the point is that sometimes that lineage is helpful. But the downside of it is that it doesn't always guarantee the Krishna consciousness of the devotee. So the son of the son of the son might not be a devotee. Just like Advaita Acharya, he had three sons who were Brahmins, who were devotees, and three sons who weren't. So what happened in Bengal was that those who were the sons of the sons of the sons, who were the Goswamis, sometimes they became very polluted. They were born in Vaishnav families, and they thought that because their father was a Vaishnav, they also had a hereditary right to initiate. And with this initiation, that was the Guru Dakshina was the way they lived. Guru Dakshina, big question for everybody, isn't it? We won't talk about that now. See me in private. But we have a system in Bengal where the Muslims, this is very interesting, the Muslims who were there from Persia and Turkey, Ottoman Empire and everything, they came and they took over the land. Then they saw that the local people would give Guru Dakshina to the gurus who lived in a particular part of the land. So they had a zonal guru system. So everybody would come to that particular holy place and give taxes. Then, because what you do, if you have, let's say you have 20,000 disciples. Now, and if you have 20,000 disciples, and they all give you something every year, that is a lot of money and a lot of grain. So the Muslims, they saw this, and they saw that this is a very good tax system. So they used to take a percentage of the Guru Dakshina, and in return, they used to support by royal patronage that now you carry on being the guru for this particular part of the country. So the caste Goswamis were in place by sort of royal decree. They had that power. The Muslim government had that power. And that's why when there was a big fight originally with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with the tantrics, and the tantrics didn't want anybody else stimulating people to any other religion. That was their patch. They'd got it sewn up with the local government. And of course that's why the Muslim officers came to break the mridangas. Later on, after everything, you know the story, the Chankazi, he gave his royal seal of approval. Now the royal seal of approval is a badge and it's carried around on a stick. So the royal seal of Muslim approval for a local guru, it looks like this. Chi, chi, chi. So that's why when the Harinam party went out, they would carry the Muslim seal. It's two crescents, with a crown. They carry it with a stick. Now we go out, devotees go out on Harinam sometimes, and we carry this stick, and we think, oh yeah, this is the sign of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. No, it's the sign of the Islamic ruler's permission that you can now collect Guru Dakshin. Maybe our sannyasis should also carry one. So this became a big problem, especially when Narottam Das Thakur, who did not come from a Brahmin family, you see, he came from another type of family, but he was initiating. And they said, how is this Narottam Das Thakur, well, they didn't call him Thakur, how is this Narottam Das initiating? He's not from a Goswami family. So they set out to try to defeat him. And they got the local king involved, who this time was a Hindu king. This was in the 1600s, I think so. And the king's name was Narasimha, and they got him involved with his court pandit, and they came to a place called Keturi, where the first Gorpanim ceremony was held, and this was Narottam Das Thakur's headquarters. That's why the first Gorpanim was held there, because Narottam Das Thakur and Janavamata wanted to heal the divisions. Now, you may not like to hear this, but immediately after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was actually three Hare Krishna movements, and they all did different things. So it's not unusual to find that. What we have now in the form of ISKCON, where you can turn up at any temple in the world and sing the same songs at the same time of day, this was just not there. Because in Vrindavan, we had the six Goswamis, and they had one way of life. It was a way of life that didn't involve temples so much, but they were traveling and each night under a different tree, and etc. And then we had the Mutt system in Jagannath Puri, and this was what we would recognize as the ashram system, people all living together. And then another system in Bengal of the time was Lord Nityananda, and everybody was householders. All the gurus were householders, you see. So there was three different Hare Krishna movements. So Janavamata, the wife of Lord Nityananda and Narottam, wanted to make arrangements for the three Hare Krishna movements to become one Hare Krishna movement. And that they did. That they did. So that's what was inherited on down. Anyway, not everybody liked it. So the king and his pandit got involved and they came to Keturi. And what happened was that Narottam Das Thakur's two disciples, whose names were, was it Ganga Narayan and Rupa Kaviraj? I forget. Anyway, they went to the marketplace and they opened up shops. They posed themselves as pan sellers and pot wallers. And when the king's pundit came there, or when the men came there, they discovered that the pot waller and the pan seller were selling their items in the marketplace in pure Sanskrit. Now this you don't hear, and the only way you can hear someone speaking Sanskrit is if you know Sanskrit yourself, and you can hear, oh, this person's speaking Sanskrit. This is not the local language. It's not Bengali. It's not Orison. It's, there's Sanskrit here. So they said, so you know Sanskrit? They said, oh, yes, we know something. He said, what do you know? What sort of, do you know any philosophy? Yes, we know something. We just sell our pan. And then they would come out with a long line of Vedanta. And the man got troubled. He said, but what about this? What about that? And they said, yes, well, what you've said is that the Sanskrit clause that you're using is the ablative, and you should have used the nominative case ending. This is not good grammar, what you're suggesting. So what this Vedanta really means is this. He said, well, how do you know this? You're only a potwala. He said, oh, we're disciples of Narottam. All of Narottam's disciples are this educated. He said, what, they're as educated as you, a simple potwala? He said, oh, much more. So he went back and he told the king, and then the king came and the king said, oh, I don't think that we can do this. So the king went home, and at night Durga Devi came, and she had a big sword. So they had the sword for, big sword, big curved sword, and she said, you have to surrender. And the fact that you have offended Narottam Das means that now you will die. I will kill you with this sword. If you want to be excused, you have to go to Narottam and beg forgiveness. And so he went to Narottam, begged forgiveness, became a disciple, etc. But the caste Goswami prejudices continued because there's money involved. And there's a sense of ownership involved, sense of propriety involved. And it got so bad during the time of Bhaktivinod Thakur, there was another Sahaja group, the Ativadis, and Bishaki Shane was one of their followers. They did some mystical things, and he would lean into fire, and his fire would come from his head, and Bhaktivinod had to deal with him. So the Sahajya section is worse than the Jata Gosai, because they not only, take money and think that they have a right to initiate other people, whereas other people do not, but they mix up their devotion, love of the soul for Krishna, with the feelings of their own body. So they think that they can experience devotion to Krishna with this mind and this body. Therefore, they'll dress as gopis, or they'll engage in dancing with other men's wives, thinking that Krishna does it, and therefore we can also do. So these things were there, and they are very subtle. They first come as subtle philosophy, subtle changes in the philosophy. And that's why Prabhupada was always very quick to respond to subtle changes in the philosophy, because it doesn't take much to change the mind of a group of devotees. Devotees are simple. You can change the mind quite easily, just a very one degree. But then the next time that devotee speaks with that one degree change, next degree. Let's say if you went on a boat from Port Louis to South Africa. You're going on a ship, and you're one degree off course. By the time you get to South Africa, you might be in Mozambique. Just 1-2 degrees off. Well, that's all it takes. So Prabhupada would respond, he would sort of respond disproportionately, apparently, sometimes, to 1 degree of philosophy, because he wanted devotees to get it right, because he knows if you don't get it right this generation, then the next generation is 1 degree, next generation is 2 degrees, next generation is 3 degrees, like that. And so that's why in our Krishna consciousness movement we are all philosophers. We have to have the details. We're not simply followers. We have to be leaders. We have to understand everything that we're doing and why. Because if you don't understand why you're doing it, then how can you explain it to someone else with conviction? And that's why in a community of devotees, whether it's Mauritius or Germany or England or America, we always have to be looking for, on the one hand, successes, so that we can reward those successes. Wherever Krishna consciousness is developed, we say, well done, congratulations, thank you very much. And wherever there is deviation amongst the devotees, we have to say, I just need to talk to you, just 1 minute. Un moment. Une minute. S'il vous plaît. Just have to say, and just discuss. And there's a lot of this discussion needed, because all of us are very much polluted by lust, greed, anger, and different attachments. And therefore, when that becomes community-wide, then it results in sometimes deep divisions between different component, constituent parts of the community. So these are things to be wary of. And each and every one of them, although they may seem very, very small, they're like a Kuvalya Pida. If you're not careful, you have to be extremely careful, because like Kuvalya Pida, they will destroy everything in their path. Prabhupada said that Maya is sometimes like, he gave the story of the Vishakanya. Vishakanya? Visha means poison, and Kanya means young girl. And the kings used to practice that they would give poison, very, 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 very small drop of poison to a young girl every day, so that by the time she was mature, then even her body, just to touch it, was poison. And sometimes they used to send these girls to the king that they didn't like. And it was particularly if she was a beautiful girl and dressed very nicely in ornaments and sweet and singing and dancing and whatever. They used to really cultivate them just as a weapon of destruction. It's amazing what they used to do. They used to send to the king, and if the girl made it into the private chamber of the king, and the kings, as you know, they're just lust personified, and the king kissed the girl. As soon as he kissed the girl, as soon as there was touch of the saliva, it was deadly poison, the king would die. Prabhupada told that story. He said just a tiny little bit of saliva was enough to kill him, because she was so polluted, she was so poisoned. So sometimes when we deal with Maya, just a little touch is sufficient poison to dispatch you. Because don't forget, this is the world where we are tested to see whether we're fit for going back home, back to Godhead. And we have to pass every test. And nothing will be spared. You'll be completely exposed, humiliated, embarrassed many, 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 many times. But it's what you do when you fail in Krishna consciousness that determines whether you go back to Godhead. Each time you fail, you have to rise to the occasion again, and you have to analyze, why did I fail? And what's the next thing I should do? How can I eliminate that in my life? How can I move on? And if there's a perpetual something that happens within the community, whether it's the community of the temple or community of the state or the nation, we have to see, you know, why are all the Russian devotees like this? why are all the Bengali devotees seeming to do this? Why are the American devotees, why do they always say this or do this? This is something that needs to be challenged. Or why do all the Prabhupada disciples think like that? You see, why do all the sannyasis seem to have a culture there? Is that right? You see, and these things can be challenged. Individually, we should challenge within ourselves. That's really where it should happen. But also when it becomes when it becomes as far as community-wide, you know, one of our constituent communities, we have to say, is that right? Is that right? Is that what Prabhupada wanted? You see. So only by such discrimination can we actually arrive at a proper understanding. And only by having a proper understanding can the next entire generation of devotees in Mauritius have Krishna consciousness exactly as Prabhupada wanted it. Because this is our job. Unfortunately, our job is just to preserve ISKCON as Prabhupada wanted it and hand it on to the next generation. And their job will be to hand it on to their next generation, untouched and unchanged. Only if we do that individually and collectively, as a nation here in Mauritius, will we be doing Srila Prabhupada the service that he actually deserves. Because otherwise, 1 degree, 2 degree, 3 degree, 4 degree, you know, after three generations, perhaps you will also see, Mauritian men dressed in saris and bangles, standing at the crossroads and talking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In England it already happened. Really? Wait, in 1975 that one boy was there. And I thought, well, this is just something unusual. But then we had one Bengali guru. He wasn't from Bengal actually, he came from MP. But there are many Bengalis in MP, and he was a, you know, Gaudiya Vaishnav, but long hair. And this wasn't the Saki Bekis, this was something else. But they would shout at Krishna. They would come before Radha Krishna Murti, and they would be very angry. And they would blame Krishna for not giving them Krishna consciousness. They would say, "We are chanting so much. Why are you withholding Krishna consciousness?" And sometimes they would swear. They would curse Krishna for not giving them himself. They would get very angry at Krishna. So they'd come and stand in front of the deities and they said, you can give us Krishna prema, but you're not giving us Krishna prema. Why are you not giving? And you are something, you are like this. Anyway, he brought this to England and we had a group of people, English people, okay, long hair, shouting at Krishna. Of course, they had their own little Hare Krishna movement. It was very small. But last time I heard was this person, this English person, who was the leader, you know. The guru died. He became the guru figure. And he went to India. And last I heard that when he went to Vrindavan, his body became covered with boils. Whole body. Disfigured with boils. So don't shout at Krishna. Bow your head to Krishna. And say, "Krishna, whatever I need to learn, please teach me that." So then we have had the other aspect is where people take the Maha Mantra and they invent another Maha Mantra. Instead of chanting Hare Krishna, they chant Bhaja Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. No, Bhaja Nitai Gauradesham, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. You see. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, any time I hear a Harinam party chanting this, he said, he send all the brahmacharis to the door with gongs. Dong, 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 dong. And until that party went by. But they're still there. Because one Charan Das Babaji, he went all over teaching this mantra to everyone. That Nitai Gaur and Radhe Shyam are the same person. And of course they're not. You see, Nitai Gaur is Krishna Balaram. But they were teaching different things. So then we had one person who was chanting everywhere he went. He would come to our temple. He would chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Jesus Mary, Jesus Mary, Mary Mary, Jesus Jesus. Mad. But he was very rich. And he had land in Jagannath Puri, and he had an ashram. But the point is that wherever it can happen, and we don't take steps to prevent it from happening, it will happen. And then when it's taught to the next generation, then it becomes fossilized. So everything we do must have a reason. And everything we do, you must know the reason why we do it. Otherwise you can't teach it to someone. That's the thing. Because in one respect, every single person in the Hare Krishna movement in ISKCON is a preacher, a teacher, and in that respect, a guru. We should not be afraid of the word guru. It simply means a teacher. That's all. So each and every person is a guru, and we're meant to share what we have with others. The fact that you don't do it means that you're perhaps waiting for someone else to do it. But that someone else will never come. There will never be anybody else. So therefore it is important for everybody to take the message of Srila Prabhupada and to share it with others. So be clear about the message, be clear how to apply the message in daily life, and also be very clear how to explain things so that people will understand and accept. And then all the Kuvalyapidas of Virodhi to Bhakti will all be destroyed by Krishna. Hare Krishna. Time? 9:10. Oh, too much. Too much. You're the temple president. You can do anything you like. Except you can't dress in a sari. I think everything that Prabhupada said is applicable for the next 10,000 years. But I think our dealings should be polite. We should be polite. It depends which branch of the Gaudiya Mat you go to. Shira Maharaj, yeah. Yeah. I think that on the whole they're very respectful towards ISKCON. The difficulty is that sometimes people are very sticky fingered, and the tendency to initiate very quickly is there. So when a person goes to Gaudiya Mat and become initiated very quickly, then they don't get the benefit often of some of the training and the service opportunities that ISKCON can provide. ISKCON is the best bet in Navadvip. Many young men who used to join the Gaudiya Mat are now joining ISKCON. Simply because when you go to a place where there's, 400, 500 brahmacharis and so many service opportunities in Bengal, Bangladesh, different parts of India, different parts of the world, it's a good prospect for a young man to become a brahmachari with ISKCON. And some of the Gaudiya Mat in Navadvip, they complain that ISKCON is taking their best men. Sometimes also they're leaving the Gaudiya Mat to come and join ISKCON when they are sort of, mature people. After receiving training in the Gaudiya Mat, then in order to, do the preaching, then they come to ISKCON. But Generally speaking, there is a historical context in which Prabhupada said those things. It was at the time when his disciples were very much, India was underdeveloped as far as ISKCON was concerned, and his godbrothers did want to, you know, they also wanted support, they were also looking for support. But at the same time, you know, when Prabhupada was asked by Mukunda Maharaj, he said, Prabhupada, if you don't come back after your heart attack to America, shall we get one of your godbrothers to come over and run the movement? Because originally that was Prabhupada's idea. He was going to have a GBC with 10 men and 12 men actually. 10 would be his disciples and 2 would be members of the Gaudiya Math. So this was his idea for ISKCON, that 10 members would be his disciples and 2 members would be from the Gaudiya Math, because Mangal Niloy Brahmachari had been invited to come over to and he said, well, because he was friendly with Prabhupada, he said, I can't come because my Guru Maharaj won't let me come. He'd also invited all his godbrothers to come and take part. That was his idea of the united preaching mission. And of course there are persons like Jai Pataka Swami, Jai Dvaita Swami, Bhakti Purushottam Swami, who are cultivating good relations with leaders of the Gaudiya Math in order to just have good relations, because in the spirit of having a united preaching mission. The difficulty comes because Prabhupada fashioned ISKCON as an antidote to some of the aspects of the Gaudiya Math that were not working. So in that, there will always be disagreements. So when we work closely with them, we will find those differences come up. I think that most leaders in ISKCON now have understood that the Gaudiya Math is not going away, that in many places they are there, and unless something drastic happens, they will still continue to attract some people. There will be many Hare Krishna movements. You know, that's all right. We have to get used to the fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is for everyone in Kali Yuga. He's not the god of ISKCON only, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is for everyone. So someone will become inspired to be a worshipper of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, usually because of ISKCON, because, you know, who is preaching everywhere? So we tell them about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then they make up their own ideas. So whether they want to make up their own ideas and dress in a sari, or begin initiating, or build a temple, you know, Mahaprabhu Mandir, or whatever it is they wish to do, we have no say in that. But what I feel ISKCON has to do is to make sure that any single person who comes to us, we give them adequate care. Because a lot of people will join the Gaudiya Math because they're small and they can receive attention and they can talk to people about philosophy. Whereas in ISKCON, we're also often busy, big temples, big plans, big preaching, that sometimes when a person comes and they just want to know about Krishna, we don't have any time. So therefore we have to find people within our congregation that are good philosophers and good trainers, and they can give time to people. Hence my point last night and the night before, that we need this shape organization. These people right at the top, temple president and congregation director and various people, they may not have the time. Their time is, you have to select very carefully. But the one-to-one time for a beginner doesn't have to be with the temple president. It can be with someone who knows more than them. As long as you're always with someone who inspires you and who can teach you something that you don't know already, then you feel cared for. But when you know as much as the person who's teaching you and you want to go further, then you need to go the next level up. So we just have to make sure that there is a next level up, because you can't argue with a person's feelings. What does a person feel they get when they go to the Gaudiya Math? Well, if they get more of their questions answered, it means that ISKCON is not answering their questions. If they get more personal attention, it means that we have to give them more personal attention. Not always our top people, but they have to get it from somewhere. So if ISKCON is a big family, then we have to find, you know, cousins and nieces and nephews that can look after people. That's what I've seen. When ISKCON fails, all other organizations, they become successful. But personally, we have so many branches now. We have people who left ISKCON in the 1980s, and people like Narasimha Maharaj in South India has a small group. Tripurari Maharaj has a small group. They're mainly small groups. And it's very advantageous to be part of ISKCON because of the size of ISKCON. When everybody works together in ISKCON, it's the most wonderful thing. When people fight in ISKCON, it's the most horrible thing to witness. You see. Therefore, Prabhupada said, unity in diversity. Keep your diversity. That's fine. But let's have some unity. Now, if the Gaudiya Math comes to... these days, they still have, you know, very empowered preachers. Of course, we saw the phenomenon, the 10-year phenomenon that was, Narayan Maharaj, which pretty much devastated us in England. Actually, we lost about 250 devotees. They lost a similar number in Australia and in different parts of the world. But interestingly enough, we've now lost 150 devotees to a very new phenomenon. This is Anantadas Babaji of Radhakund, who is the leader of the very group who challenged Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati so strongly in the 1930s. That we now have ISKCON devotees who don't know that history, 150 of them going to be initiated by him. So they were from Delhi. So we have to be very clear. Sometimes people just want Krishna consciousness, but they want better attention, better service. They don't want to be. They don't want to feel so much part of an institution. They want to feel part of a small group. Everybody really wants to be part of a small family. So we have to create that small family feel for them, even though ISKCON is big. When you can have a big institution that creates the small family feel, then you have something successful. Just like when a person becomes a Roman Catholic, you don't join the Vatican. You join your local church. And in your local church, people have time for you. So because ISKCON is international, sometimes we tend to forget the local. People are impressed by big things. They do like it that we have a big international headquarters in Mayapur, or that we have a big new Adbhuta Mandir being built in Mayapur. This is all very wonderful. So now ISKCON will have its own, Vatican, its own Vatican City, where our top leaders will meet, and devotees can go on pilgrimage. That's also wonderful. But along with that, we can never forget that people don't actually join big institutions because they like big institutions. They come because they're lonely spiritually, and they're searching for a personal relationship with Krishna. I didn't join ISKCON because I wanted to be part of an international organization. If I wanted to be part of an international organization, I could have joined the Red Cross or the Freemasons or whatever. I joined because somebody said, Prabhupada is coming in a few months. That's why I joined. They said, just wait. Prabhupada is coming in a few months and you can see him. And I said, okay, I'll wait. I'll wait until he comes. Because some devotees I liked, because they had time for me, and some devotees I thought they were very, proud. I thought some devotees were stupid. I thought some didn't understand the philosophy very well. So there were some things I liked and some things I didn't like. But I waited until Prabhupada came. But the point is that, my first 6 years of my Krishna consciousness, I only spent 3 days in the temple. And for 6 years, I was traveling in the back of a van with just three other people. So ISKCON, for me, was four people. For the first 6 years of my devotional life. And then I went to Africa, and it was 10 people. So I've always been part of a very small ISKCON. Small is beautiful. But ISKCON itself, our big international organization, is made up of such small groups. That's much more human size for people. You see. Anyway, the point is that we have to be able to give them that commodity. Otherwise they will join something small. And we have to be able to give them the philosophy that they need to answer their questions, which takes time. So you don't have to do it, but all down the line we have to make sure that each and every member of our Sangha, our broader Sangha, our community, knows the philosophy well. That's why training and education is one of the main duties. Often if you're in a position of responsibility, which means management, you think in terms of finances and maintenance and building repair. And these things are equally important, and Prabhupada would always talk about them. But we have to think about reading Prabhupada's books, whether people are understanding, whether they're being trained. Can everybody cook? Can everybody do puja? Is everybody becoming initiated? If they are becoming initiated, are we looking after them after they've become initiated? Are they preaching? Are devotees preaching? If they're not preaching, why not? If you're not preaching, it means that deep inside you, you either feel that you've got nothing to give to others, or that you feel that you don't know enough, or you feel that something's stopping you. So what's stopping every single member preaching? Because that should come naturally. If you've got something, you want to share it. So when all those things are there, when the preaching is there and people feel the response from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a result of their preaching, when their philosophical questions are answered, when their difficulties in spiritual life when they're being guided through those difficulties, and when they have a small group that they have a sense of belonging, then no other organization will be a competition. So we don't have to worry about anybody or anything. Except if a person is philosophically deviant and wants to, do something else, then you will always have that. I think 1 or 2% of devotees in any yatra will always want to go somewhere else and do something else. And I don't think we'll be able to stop that. Prabhupada couldn't stop it. We had the whole Siddhaswarup phenomenon. When I first went to India in 1977, Prabhupada had, we were all living in the Long Building, which had just been built there in Mayapur. And there was another group of devotees from Hawaii, and they were camped out in the banana patch where Prabhupada's Samadhi is right now. There used to be a big banana patch. And they were camped out there. And these were devotees that were, they were not ISKCON. There was another movement called the Haribol movement. Haribolanandas, yeah. So a big yoga teacher had joined from Hawaii, and he brought 150 of his followers with him. They all shaved their heads, the men at least, and they were a credit to ISKCON for a couple of years, and then they had. So they're still there. Siddhaswarup is still around. He's very big in the Philippines. Yeah. Still there. So that's why part of ISKCON's duty is to go everywhere, this generation. That's what Prabhupada did. He went everywhere, every continent. I mean, just think of it. He came to Mauritius twice. He went all over America several times. Came to the UK like 6 times. Paris, Germany. so many places. So as well as giving his teachings, he gave his teachings geographically as widespread as possible. Because when you want an international movement, you have to capture different points. I lived in Nairobi, in Kenya, for a while, and Prabhupada and Brahmananda Swami turned up at the door of the house, and Prabhupada was carrying Radharani, the deity of Radharani, and Brahmananda was carrying Krishna. So physically brought the deities. So this is Prabhupada wanting to establish things. That's why we call him the Pratishtha Acharya, Samstapaka Acharya, the founder. You really found something. Like when you do in India, if you have a piece of land, you install the deity first, even before the building. You do the pran pratishtha of the deity there, and then no one can take that land away from you. Everybody knows. If Krishna's on that land, you can't come and take that land. Except Mr. Nair in Bombay. He tried. But he passed. So there's no competition. No competition. And when there's no competition, we can afford to be friendly. And sometimes generous. One or two people, what's the problem? But then we should know, you can't come between the organizations. That's the culture. If you're in the Gaudiya Math, that's it. You can't come and give classes at the ISKCON program and then run an ISKCON group. You have to stay there. Choose. You choose which family you want to belong to, then you're in that family, not in the other family. And so it's a bigger decision than just, you know, visiting. And once you take Diksha, that means you've joined the family. You're a member of that family. And we wish you well. We should tell them, we wish you well. You're going back to Godhead with another family, Hari Bol. But this is the Prabhupada family. Hari Bol. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for listening. Hare Krishna.